cliffcentral.com.
Warming up my voice, you know, that's what we're meant to do every morning. Meant to wake up and go and sit down and go la 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 la. Lurrily, larrily, lurrily, lurrily. And say things like, she sells seashells under the seashore, on the seashore. Give yourself tongue twisters to wake you up. That's what you meant to do. There's a guy who used to train us. Mabs remembers him. His name was Rob Vickers. Do you remember Rob Vickers?
Yes, I do.
Remember how old he was? He's a billion years old.
Yep.
He was a billion. If you cut off one of his fingers, you'd see there were rings for every 100 years that he had lived.
Oh, same.
Like a tree. And he would say to us, now, the most important thing to do, you remember, he used to actually talk like that.
Well, he trained broadcasters. That was his thing.
The first ever broadcasters.
Yeah.
He was there at the beginning.
The most important thing to do is to enunciate clearly and properly.
Remember?
If you say a word and you don't pronounce it properly, people who are listening to you won't know what you're talking about.
That's how he would talk. And he would say to you, you have to warm up your voice before you go on the air. You don't just sit there and start to talk. Right? Say, you must pronounce everything perfectly. You must make sure you're breathing. And it must be diaphragmatic breathing.
Oh.
You've got to use your diaphragm like a singer would. And then talk like this as you exhale.
Could you actually keep a straight face throughout all of this
training? I used to do this thing. I would distract him because he was so old. It was so easy to distract him. He was very old. He was a very old man. So I would ask him questions. And then he would take so long answering the questions that we only had a 15-minute session.
Oh.
And when he looked up, our session was over. So I would say to him, you know, Rob, you're from Australia, right? And he'd go, yes, I am. I was born there. And I'd say to him, well, how many time zones are there in Australia? I am fascinated.
Oh.
And he'd say, well, it's a good question. And let me tell you all about the time zones in Australia. And then he would tell me, and he'd talk for the whole 15 minutes about the time zones in Australia. Go, oh, look at that. It's already 15:15. I got to go. And he never got to teach me anything. Did you learn anything from him?
Yeah, I listened.
You were a good student.
I was a good student.
You've always been a better student.
And so what
did you get out of it?
Well, I mean, you know, he helped me with the whole news anchoring thing.
Oh, yeah.
Interviewing people, speaking a certain way, you know, stuff that nobody else was going to teach me.
Sure, it worked. Hmm. And you think it worked?
Yeah.
I mean, you got jobs in TV and stuff as a result.
Sure.
Rocket Point, Long Island, 1933.
Sure.
Guglielmo Marconi and David Sarnoff visit the birthplace of broadcasting. Radio's first castle was this rustic shack. In 1921, radio fans are all earphones listening to a pioneer station, WHN.
Huh?
This
like
set explorers hear such performers as Miriam Batista, child movie star.
Isn't that music?
One of radio's trailblazing announcers introduces what he calls a little peach from a Broadway show. The peach poses as radio gets called everything from gag to gadget, at best a plaything and a fad.
Yes.
But fate is to make radio a power in a world of peace and war.
Right. We need music like this. This is why we don't have
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922.
Why we don't have enough stuff going on.
News gathering.
Radio needs to be resuscitated.
Public office. Andrew White comes to a WJZ microphone with latest news in sports in what is then the latest in broadcasting studios. But
Isn't that
growth
cool?
Of radio is swift. From toothpick antennas sprout these beacons of broadcasting. The Port Jefferson Tower. And in Arlington, Virginia, here's one 600 feet high.
Oh, wow.
Radio waves over ocean waves. In 1923, one of the first American overseas broadcasts is heard in England by Captain West of the BBC.
How cool. And Rob Vickers was there to train them all.
Is he still around?
No, of course he's dead.
Oh.
What are you, insane?
Bless.
No, he was basically, if you touched him, he would turn to dust. If you went like that, he'd blow away. He was very old.
Oh, no.
A very old man, sure.
I say.
No, really. Very interesting chap. You know, Sia, the most important thing for you to remember, you're quite good, but avoid sibilance.
Sibilance?
That sound. When you make too many sibilant S sounds, it tends to annoy an audience.
What's his background? Was he actually a broadcaster in his time?
Yeah, he had a show.
See, he invented the radio.
Ah.
He had a show, and he called himself Rob on the Job.
Stop!
No, really. Really? Hey, do you want to hear Simba? He's on the line. Hey, Simba, what's up, bro?
It's Friday.
Yeah, you sound very happy. What are you doing? What are you doing for Friday?
It's actually Thursday night. Just got done with a bunch of work. Oh. And
well, you are in SoCal.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so
yeah.
He's Mr. Done. California. Hardest thing in San Diego. I can't remember what you do for a living, but it's okay.
Yeah.
All right, what do you want? What's up?
Nothing. I was just going to call it. I've been catching up on podcasts. I haven't heard you guys in a while, live at least. I've been catching up on podcasts. And you guys were talking about cyborgs, right? And
yes.
How they're coming around.
Uh-huh.
So I do want to posit you a theory. I think I would argue that we're already cyborgs. Because think about this. We already have access to more information than anyone in the history of mankind, right?
Right.
The only difference between us and what we would consider cyborgs that we see on sci-fi movies is our input and output devices are just slower. So instead of being connected to our brains directly,
right,
we've got these slow fingers and, you know, we have to read. But at the end of the day, we still have the same capability as these, you know, the cyborgs that we would have seen in movies, in sci-fi movies in the 90s and 80s.
Like the Terminator.
Exactly.
So what's your special power if you're a cyborg? Come on.
I have the ability to, I don't know, you know,
to turn a woman on. You could turn a woman on at great distance by using WhatsApp.
Exactly. That's easy. So think about that. If I were to tell you that in 1992, you'd call me crazy.
Yeah, if you'd said to me in 92, I will be able to show a woman my penis without even being in the same state as she is in, I would have said
not
to
even
you,
one woman.
Yeah, I would have said to you, you're a liar.
Yeah, imagine if I told you I can show my penis to 6 million people that follow me.
Yes.
And want to see it.
Yes.
Not that that would happen, but yeah.
Well, who knows? Maybe you got a really impressive penis. It's happened before, you know?
Oh, jeez. I'll choose to keep that one to myself. But unless, you know, Mubs, of course.
Well, she doesn't want to know. She'll choose, thank you very much. Don't you dare send her dick pics.
Yeah, do not be foisting your penis upon her.
Yeah. She'll be very quick to put you in your place.
Huh? No, don't worry, Mubs. I won't. I'll be nice.
Yeah,
I just wanted to call in.
You make a good point, though. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, actually. Like we're
right?
Already, yeah. This is sensible. I thought you were going to say something stupid, but that's very true.
No, it's just been something that I've been thinking about for like since I listened to that, and it's just been racking my head. And like we really are in the future. And you know, think about things like self-driving cars. I mean, that's happening before the end of the year. You know, we'll have at least a couple different cars that'll have the complete ability to drive themselves from point A to point B.
Well, what do you think the most exciting next development's going to be? Come on, let's all place a bet on this and let's see who gets the closest to the truth.
Ooh, man. Okay, so this week there was a discovery of those 7 exoplanets that were relatively close to a star, right?
Uh-huh.
And 3 of them are within what they would call the habitable zone,
the
right?
The Goldilocks zone.
Exactly, exactly. So I think the most exciting thing within the next maybe 40 to 50 years will be actually finding some sort of life on a different, on another planet.
Mm.
That for me is, that's the holy grail.
I like that. Anybody else want to
wait? I don't know what it is.
Well, you want to wait in? Ben, Mubs, Sia, come on.
I think actual political cyborgs, people that will just go up there, they just don't even bother lying anymore. They just have pre-programmed words in suits.
Okay. So they're just designed to lie.
Because, you know, politicians are so tired of going to parliament at the moment.
It takes a lot
it
of time.
It takes so much time. I mean, you sit there, you fall asleep, they're just going to send out bots.
And the bots will go out and get dumb people's votes.
Parliament bots, yeah.
Okay. All right. That's a horrible, horrible possible development, but I'm with you. How about you, Sia? What do you reckon?
I don't know. I'm starting to think, like, where would I...
Just say it, Sia. You want to clone yourself. Yeah, say it.
I would have great conversations with myself. I'm just saying.
I would not complain.
Yeah, because the talking to myself in a mirror thing isn't cutting it anymore. Mm. So, yeah, I'd actually appreciate a part of myself in a non-narcissistic way.
All right.
How can that be non-narcissistic, though?
It's the most narcissistic thing ever.
No, it's just being rational about things.
I think you should embrace it, Sia.
Thank you. You know, now that I have your approval, Simba, I definitely shall.
Ooh. Oh, thank you. It means a lot to me that you you value that.
All right, how about you, Mubs?
Well, wouldn't that then be a form of immortality if you could clone yourself? Because then every time one of you expires, there's already another one waiting.
One in the fridge.
In the fridge to take over.
That is it.
Like physically.
Immortality.
But not like my soul and my personality, is it?
Well, I mean, your brain matter, your thoughts, your memories could be transplanted into the clone.
Yes, correct. You could download your entire consciousness and just put it into the clone, which means you live forever.
Okay, so, well, that would present the problem of population. But I think maybe you could say, okay...
No, not everyone will be able to afford it. But are you insane? I mean, most people won't be able to do this. So it'll be a very reserved group of people who'll get to do it.
Or maybe you could pay with your ability to have kids, right? So you could say, okay, take my fertility away and I live forever.
Right. Mm. So you choose. You either have kids or you live forever. Watch how few people have kids from then on. Because I reckon I still have this theory that a lot of people only have children because it's an ego thing. They're like, they want to live forever and they want to live forever through their kids.
Oh, what's a kid going to look like if we actually make one?
Yes, correct. There's that too. There's a curiosity.
You know, I completely agree. I think having kids, I mean, I love my nieces and nephews, but I think having kids is a completely selfish thing.
Yes. Yes and no. I think it's the least selfish thing in some ways. It could be, you know, some people really, really want to get it right. Like, humans screw other humans up all the time. And there's some people who go, right, let's make a child and let's try to do this properly. We'll try to raise it right. Mm. And they are the least selfish people I know. They pour their life, their heart, their soul, their money, their time into a child. And they raise amazing humans. And then there are some
I think it becomes that. But I think from the get-go, it really is an exercise in passing your, either, you know, extending your bloodline or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, that's the ego part that I'm talking about.
Right.
You know,
right.
But for some people, it's the least selfish thing you could do. Like, the reason I don't have kids is because I'm too selfish.
Right.
Like, I really enjoy my life. I'm having a good life.
Yeah, you'd also need to like someone, Gareth, to have a child with.
Yeah, I'd have to actually, like, pay attention to another person. So, you know, you think C has a problem with his clone. But maybe that's a good solution. Like, you have... You have the authorities say, well, you choose. You either can live forever through your clones or you can have a child, but you can't have both.
Yeah, it's like in sports, you know, you sub in and you sub out. So if you're ready to go, you get another guy to come in.
Exactly, while keeping quality on the field.
Okay, I like it. All right, dude.
Cool, guys. Well, hey, I don't want to bore the audience too much, but yeah, that's what I wanted to call about. And then
all right.
I'm going to shoot you an email about the whole Trump thing. I've got a lot of thoughts about that. But,
all right, dude.
Yeah, I don't want
good
to bore
stuff,
you
man. No, not boring. Okay, thanks, Simba. Very, very good.
Cool, guys. Take care.
Cool.
Happy Friday.
There you go. Ciao, Simba. That's always interesting. It's good to hear from him. Simba is in Southern California.
Hmm.
Making a difference, getting stuff done. You know, there's this dude. I actually am really excited to talk to him. He's a Navy SEAL. He wants to talk to us about what he learned as a Navy SEAL that you can implement into leadership and into your own life. And I think, I don't know about you, but I think this kind of thing is fascinating. Like, first of all, to be a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be the smartest, fastest, just the most incredible human being. So let me tell you about this dude first. His name is Leif Babin. He returned from combat in Iraq, was decorated with a Purple Heart and a Silver Star. After the war, he became the primary leadership instructor for all officers graduating from the U.S. Navy SEAL training pipeline. While there, he reshaped SEAL leadership training to better prepare SEAL officers for the immense challenges of combat. In 2011, he retired from active duty and co-founded something called Echelon Front, a highly sought-after leadership consulting company. So he's coming to South Africa. I thought, let's check in with him quickly and see what he's all about. Hey, Leif, nice to speak to you, man. How are you? Is he there yet? Oh, you're still getting him.
So which country is he from originally? South
US.
Africa?
No, the U.S. American. Navy SEAL.
Well, I would just like to...
U.S. Navy SEAL.
I would just like to know if his life is just like one of those in the Shame music video for If I Could Turn Back Time. You know, like she performs on a ship.
Jesus, is that Navy your only? Is that your reference to Navy SEAL? Sure.
That's my only question.
Really?
I don't care about...
Okay, maybe shouldn't open with that.
All right. Do you know what a Navy SEAL is? Let's start with that.
No.
They work on a ship and in water. They're like the army
no, that's
for
a sailor.
The water, okay. Right?
That's a sailor.
That's a sailor. What do you think, Navy? Ben, take away.
Okay.
Well, the acronym of SEAL basically means you kick ass on every single thing in the world. So whether it's the land, it's the ocean, it's the mountains, it's the air, whatever.
Oh.
That's what they do. And it is probably the most apex, alpha, pinnacle, male possible thing you could do. I mean, you could... If we were to go to Mars and you needed like a wingman, you would take a Navy SEAL with you.
Right.
Because somehow he would know what to do there. He just would.
So the Navy SEAL, for lack of a better comparison, would be like the deck athlete. He can do it
in
all.
In the Olympics,
he
correct.
He can do pretty everything.
Much, yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, SEAL everything. Actually stands for sea, air, and land.
Correct.
Yep.
Oh, everything. Party people.
And, I mean, like the drop-off rate. People who try to become SEALs and people who actually are SEALs, I don't know what the figure is, but it's very, very low. You go to places where you don't think you're going to go as a human.
Yeah.
And, it's the ultimate human sacrifice to try to get to this point. It's just,
they're amazing. Wow. They're amazing people. Their training enables them. I mean, they're a special operations force. Their training enables them to handle any kind of terrain, river, ocean, swamp, delta, coastline. And they're trained to operate in all those environments. And they go through the most incredible, intensive training. And I think as of 2016, they're all still male. And members of the U.S. Navy. They got some seriously interesting special ops groups in there as well. Let's go and let's talk to him. Let's speak to this man because I'm fascinated by his story and especially the stuff he's done since he left the SEALs. His name is Leif Babin. How are you, Leif? Nice to speak to you, man.
Good morning. Great to talk to you guys.
Great to talk to you. So you're coming to South Africa, you're talking leadership. But I mean, when you started off as a SEAL, that wasn't something you ever thought would be in your future, right? I mean, it almost sounds so different. I know what you ended up doing in the SEALs, but what an incredible change from kind of, doing this intense training, going on special operations missions, and now standing up in front of a huge crowd of civilians and telling them about leadership.
Well, Joplin and I always laugh when we finish talking and people start clapping because nobody does that in the military. Nobody actually stands up. Nobody claps. They just leave the room. That's it. So it's a little bit of an adjustment, but you know, I went to the SEAL program to be a combat leader, right. And I loved being a combat leader. I got the chance to lead troops on the battlefield in some very intense urban combat in the Battle of Ramadi in 2006. But more than that, we Jocko and I came back with some lessons learned from that intense urban combat. And we had some amazing triumphs on the battlefield where we helped the Army and Marine Corps secure an awesome victory in a place where very few people thought we could win, and really turned the security situation around there and handed that city back over to the local people and took it away from these evil terrorists that were controlling it. But more importantly, we had some horrible tragedies as well. We lost the first SEALs of combat, and we had some just very humbling experiences that we learned from. So Jocko and I came back and we built SEAL leadership training for the SEAL teams. I took over a leadership course and ran that for 2 years. And it was something that I just felt really passionate about, passing on these lessons learned, the mistakes I'd made, and what the next generation of SEAL leaders could learn from it. And that's exactly what we do now in the business world, is talk to leaders from any business, any organization, any leader or aspiring leader that wants to get better. And we talk about things like extreme ownership, you know, this idea that you got to own everything in your world. There's no excuses. There's no blame. You gotta own it all to actually develop, own the problem, and then develop a solution to the problem to deliver a better outcome.
I love that. That's like the ultimate sense of personal accountability, right? You a lot of people go through their lives and all they do is try to find excuses why their life didn't turn out the way they thought it would, and why things aren't going their way, and how everyone else is to blame and everything else is to blame, and circumstances and all that shit. But I mean, the reality is, when you are on a mission as a Navy SEAL, there's no one you can rely on but you and your own team. And if you guys aren't ultimately accountable, lives are at stake, right?
There's a,
oh no,
ordinary people in the SEAL teams, but you,
oh man,
they're good and bad.
The line is just cutting out. I don't know, whereabouts in the US are you at the moment?
State of Ohio currently.
Oh wow, okay. Well, I don't know why, but we've got like, there's a bit of a delay and it sort of cuts out every now and then, but I am really interested in talking to you. So how long are you going to be here for?
Is that better now? Are you able to hear me now?
Yeah, it's a little bit better now.
We're going to be there for several days, and then it's going to be March 9th with their extreme ownership event. And we're looking forward to talking to leaders from South Africa across all industries, and anybody that's interested in being there, leaders and aspiring leaders to learn how to, you know, the lessons we learn from the battlefield and how to apply them to the business world and to life.
Tell me about some of the experiences that you had that informed the way that you think about leadership now when you were on the battlefield.
Well, one of the experiences, you know, as you just mentioned before, it's easy to think, for those people that haven't been in the military, they think everybody in the military is this Terminator robot that does exactly what they're told to do. And unfortunately, it's just not true. We have some extraordinary people, and certainly in the SEAL teams, we have an incredible capability, just great individuals, but there's good and bad, and there's a bell curve. There's really good people at the top, and there's folks at the bottom that aren't as good.
And I suppose you have to learn to trust people, just, right? I mean, you have to learn to kind of come up with a way of figuring out who you can trust in every situation, because you depend on each other so much.
And you have to do that through training. But even in the SEAL teams, there are good units and then there are bad units. I mean, in the military, in the Army or Marine Corps, there are good units and there are bad units. And now that Jocko and I have been doing this for 5 years now in the business world, we've worked with hundreds of leaders and dozens and dozens and dozens of companies, 100 companies at this point in the last 5 years that we worked with. It's you see the people who are doing the best, who are the most successful, they might even call it extreme ownership before they meet us, before they start talking about this, but they have this concept where they're not making excuses. They're not casting blame. They're figuring out a way to solve problems. They're leveraging their assets. They keep their egos in check. They build relationships, and they get things done. And as you mentioned before, everybody else is sitting there making excuses, pointing fingers. And I think that's the typical kind of human condition that we fall into. But the best folks are absolutely out there running circles around the rest. And they have this concept of extreme ownership. And that's really the foundation upon which everything that we learned in combat, it's the foundation upon which everything was built. And that, of all the things we talk about, of all the things we wrote about out in our book, we decided to title our book Extreme Ownership, because that's just the most fundamental mindset you have to have if you want to succeed.
Well, thank you for talking to us this morning. I'm looking forward to seeing you in the country, and good luck to you. I mean, this sounds like the kind of thing a lot of people want to attend. It's not some businessman in a suit who's telling you stuff that you heard 1,000 times before. This is someone with a completely different set of skills and a completely different set of experiences. Thank you, Leif. Very nice to speak to you, Leif Babin, who's a Navy SEAL. Interesting dude, huh?
Well, now Sia doesn't think a seal is like a sailor from a Jean-Paul Gaultier advert. Well,
that's what Sia thought. It was that guy who's in the Jean-Paul Gaultier, you know, like the Kuros bottle, that ad.
Well, now I know there's a difference between someone in the Navy and a Navy SEAL. Wait, am I still not clued up?
Keep talking. This is funny. I'm enjoying this. Go on.
Someone from the Navy works on a ship, right?
Yes.
Exactly. And then a Navy SEAL, you know, sea, air, earth, and land.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. So right. Navy members were in the If I Could Turn Back Time music video.
Oh, I don't know so much Sher.
It's a full circle moment.
I don't really know Sher so much.
It's a pity that line wasn't great, because you could have asked Leif if he was a Sher fan. Because that would be the next step, really, from, you know, leadership from battlefields to Sher.
There's another group of people who had a similar view of what the Navy was before they heard what a Navy SEAL was. See, and they called the Village People.
Macho,
and this is for you. Listen to the words.
Search the world for treasure.
Listen to this. This is what Sia thought the Navy was. You're ready, Sia. Come on. What can you learn to fly planes, sports or skin dive, study oceanography? Sign up for the Big Band or sit in the grandstand when your team and others meet.
Yeah.
All right, so Sia, that's not what a Navy SEAL is in the Village People.
But that's my
singing on the deck of a ship. But I get you, all right. Come on, protect the motherland. All right, let's get into some news. Mubs has got the headlines for us. It is 6:30. The news headlines brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. What do we love about Colcacchio? There's so many things. The app is a start. How many slices are you on now, Ben? You're a maestro.
Gareth, I'm right up there.
Yeah, Ben has been using his app, and you can get the Colcacchio Rewards app and start using it yourself. And at the same time, every other reason that you already have to go to Colcacchio is made that much better.
Yeah, it's really great, because you get slices, and then you get coupons they send you. And then obviously when you buy something, you log it. So right now I've got 745 slices.
Damn.
One visit from, so this weekend I'll become a maestro.
Excellent. All right, we'll keep an eye on Ben's scorecard and get your own. It's easy. The app is free, and you just use it every time you go to Colcacchio. It's what you're going to do anyway, right? Okay, Mubs, what do you got?
Well, the hot topic of conversation throughout this week has been around the issue of xenophobia. It almost feels like we've done a throwback to a couple of years ago when, you know, xenophobic violence gripped the country. So what happened yesterday in Nigeria is that protesters demanded that South African citizens and businesses leave their country. Earlier, protesters vandalized the head office of MTN in Abuja in retaliation for anti-Nigerian violence that's been reported in Gauteng. The National Association of Nigeria Students have given citizens of the country 48 hours to get out of Nigeria. Otherwise, they say the attacks will continue. MTN did release a statement saying that they were concerned by attacks on non-nationals, both in South Africa and Nigeria. They called for people to exercise restraint and remain calm. Protesters allegedly attacked, you know, workers at the MTN building and then also made off with some equipment.
You know, people are angry. This is the week where we talk about money. Praveen Gordon has told us we are in a slow fiscal decline because we have a government that cannot manage the economy. There is no growth, little to no growth. There are less jobs than there were at this time last year. Young people can't get work. So you know what happens? They get frustrated. And what do? If you've been victimized your whole life long, do you know what you do? You don't go after strong people and fight them. You go after people who are weaker than you. It's a syndrome. It's why women get beaten up by men who are cowardly. Because instead of going out and actually fighting a man, they'll fight with the woman who lives in the house with them, who actually loves them. It's a weakness. It's a sign of weakness. A guy who's in a township who's angry because he hasn't got anything working for him in his life. He hasn't been given any opportunities. He doesn't want to take responsibility for his own life. So instead, he beats up the Somalian shopkeeper who's opened up a shitty little shop down the road to make a living. Because he looks at that guy, he goes, oh, that's unfair. He has a shop. Instead of going, why don't I have a shop? What do I have to do to build a shop? Oh, no, that's too much work. Rather just beat up the Somalian guy. You got a Nigerian dude who's running a successful, I don't know, geezer replacement business on the corner of this and that street in the CBD. Some guy here in South Africa looks at this, goes, well, my government's been lying to me for 22 years. I don't have a job. My life has not improved. I have kids that I didn't plan to have. I have a wife at home who doesn't even know where I am because I've got two other girlfriends. But it can't be my fault, so I'll just beat up the Nigerian guy with the geezer replacement business. See my point here? This is what's happening, is that a lot of broken people are taking out their brokenness on a bunch of foreigners just because they're different and because they're weaker and because they don't have the protection of the state. It is the ultimate sign of weakness to be xenophobic. And anybody who says, Donald Trump and the Muslim ban, or Donald Trump and what he said about Mexicans, and doesn't first look here at home and address the question of xenophobic violence in this country, I can't take you seriously.
So that's what happened in Nigeria yesterday, as they want South Africans and their businesses to now leave. Back here at home, Minister of Home Affairs, Malusi Gigaba, met with organizers of a march that's been planned in Tshwane today, Gareth. It is against foreign nationals. Some of the issues that were raised by organizers of the Mamelodi Concerned Residents is around competition for jobs, access to economic opportunities, and then alleged criminal activities involving foreign nationals. This includes accusations of drug peddling and prostitution.
Oh.
And so dozens of foreign-owned shops and properties have been attacked in Atteridgeville, Mamelodi, and Pretoria West in the past week, and it has raised concerns of an outbreak of xenophobic violence. Cabinet has expressed full support to the Department of Home Affairs as well as the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster to move speedily in trying to resolve the issue.
Huh.
So that's what happened in Tshwane yesterday. And then in Atteridgeville, police arrested 42 people following xenophobic attacks yesterday. One was arrested for possession of an unlicensed firearm. 14 were nabbed for possession of dealing in drugs. 27 were foreigners without proper documentation. The arrests were made after Rosettenville residents called a hotline number that was set up by police on the 3rd of this month. And, you know, police, again, just urging both South Africans and foreign nationals to not incite violence or take the law into their own hands. It sounds like a powder cake.
It's not good. It's really not. And it's not happening, by the way, in places where people are happy and they've got their lives figured out. It's always going to happen in places where there are socioeconomic stresses. Weak people and people who are not empowered are xenophobes and bigots and racists and all those other things, because they've got insecurities. Their own life isn't working out. You ask a happy, successful, well-balanced, accountable person if they hate anybody. They probably don't. Am I right?
I don't know. It's complicated.
Not really.
No, I mean, it is from the line of conversation that I observed yesterday. It's not an easy black or white situation. It's very messy and it's very complicated.
But this kind of thing is so primal. It's different. If you and I can find a reason to be different from each other, and I can exploit you because I'm weaker or stronger than you, that's how humans are. So in this case, it's a question of why would you be violent just to people who are not from here? It's not a race thing, right? Can't call it race. It's not what would you say? It's not a class thing. It's not a kind of a level of sophistication thing, because you can't say that people who are South African are less sophisticated than people from outside, and you can't say that they're less sophisticated than us.
It might be a bit of that.
You think so?
A bit of that.
How? I'm interested.
It's this egotisticalness of I'm better than you.
Yeah, but that's got to do with that what I was saying earlier. It's a how do I fit into the pecking order thing. That's different. Mm. But not a level of sophistication. You can't tell me that Somalians are generally dumber than South Africans, or that South Africans are generally dumber than Somalians, right?
But if I'm a frustrated 30-something-year-old unemployed,
yeah,
and I now see a successful Somalian with a booming tuck shop in the corner of my street,
right,
there might be this thing of, oh, what
but
makes
that's,
you so
that's
great?
Just petty human jealousy.
Yeah, that's combined, like combined, have not crap.
Combined with weakness on your part, because instead of taking accountability for why you haven't opened up a tuck shop,
yeah,
and that guy came from a war zone. Somalia is 20 times shittier than us.
Yeah.
He came out of a war zone. God knows how he got here. He probably had to walk all the way from Somalia through how many countries, made it into this country, God knows how, probably climbed under a fence and swam through rivers full of crocodiles. And then he comes into the toughest neighborhood in South Africa and opens a tuck shop. And you're sitting on your backside and you're like, oh, it's unfair. Look at me. He's got a tuck shop. It's weakness, I'm telling you.
And definitely the manifestation of frustration as well. And well, other pent-up feelings.
I understand why people in this country are angry, our own local people. Because instead of realizing who's to blame, it's not the Somalian guys opened up a tuck shop. It's your government.
But who's the easier target?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not condoning it.
So what do you do if you're a weak person? You go after someone weaker than you.
Exactly.
That's the point.
It's sad.
Right. Okay, what else is in the news, Mubs?
Well, over in France, they're dealing with their own issues of protesting. Hundreds of French high school students staged an unauthorized anti-police rally yesterday.
No.
The French are really hating their police at the moment. Students blocked the entrances to a dozen schools in Paris in the latest in a series of protests over the alleged rape of a young black man with a police baton. Is it baton?
A man was raped with a police baton? Oh,
yes,
my God.
By the police.
Sucks.
Gee.
Really? Yes, it happened. I think it happened sometime last week. And there was huge outrage over it because there was also video footage of the incident. The man was taken to hospital. He was, you know, examined by doctors who confirmed that he was definitely assaulted,
oh,
raped.
Oh, my God.
So since then.
What a thing.
Since then, there's been, you know, just protests against the police, alleging them of police brutality. So police reported 8 arrests after violent outbreaks with youths who were hurling objects. They were damaging property. The protest comes 2 months before a presidential election as well. They go to the polls on the 7th of May. So, you know, the politicians are also kind of like getting nervous and hoping that the situation doesn't go completely out of control. So, yeah, the Paris school authority said that more than 10 schools had been targeted by youths. They piled up rubbish bins and other objects at the entrance gates. Yeah, looks like it was just a big mess. The protesters are angry over the alleged rape of a 22-year-old man. The incident happened on the 2nd of February. where the man was arrested by police officers, and then they, you know, assaulted him.
Why would you ever put a baton up someone's backside? I mean, that's clearly what they did, right?
Yeah, that's what they did.
So why would you do that? Mm. What kind of sicko are you?
That is kind of the golden question, then.
Sick?
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm sneezing suddenly. All right, let's get to Ben in the sport. What do you have for us, Ben? Here's your very sexy intro music.
Well, we called it here a couple of weeks ago.
What's that?
Leicester said they are completely behind Claudio Ranieri. They give them full support, which we said means that he's literally on his last days. Well, that last day was yesterday. He has been sacked. That's it. Claudio Ranieri gone. 9 months ago, he was the greatest man on earth, actually. All of earth. Because he took Leicester from nothing to Premier League champions. But now they're 1 point above the relegation zone. They're pretty much screwed. They're out of every cup they could possibly want to be in. And with that, Leicester believe they should need a change in leadership. Which so sucks.
Fire the guy who got them there.
Yeah, he was pretty much... This is the thing about sports, you know, but you know what you're in for here. So as wrong as it is, when you're a manager and things go bad, it's you, unfortunately. They don't go, oh, that guy played left back. Oh, he's crap. We're throwing him out right now. You don't suddenly see players getting fired. They just don't have their contracts negotiated, or they end up going to China. That'd be quite funny. Oh, he scored an own goal. He's out on his ass. Can't have that stuff happening here. Yeah, it never happened. Wayne Rooney, there's been so much speculation about him about leaving Man United. He hasn't been able to start a game for the Red Devils since mid-December, I think, in the league.
But he's been there since Rob Vickers was in radio.
Exactly. He's also kind of past it. But he is the biggest goal scorer, the top highest goal scorer in Man United history. Well, like a lot of sentiment involved there. But who really wants Wayne Rooney right now? I mean, I wouldn't see any top-flight team wanting to take him. And, of course, then the China money comes into it, right? But he says that he is committed to staying at the club. Whether he starts or not, he's committed to the club, which is fine because, you know, uprooting your whole family, your orange family, to take to China, who knows what could happen? It's a risky life choice. So good on you, Wayne Rooney. Staying true. Mostly right. Because nobody else really wants him. That's the bottom line here. Super Rugby kicked off last night Australian time. And the Rebels, they got absolutely hammered, 56-18 by the Blues. Now, both of these teams won their respective home games last year. Rebels running out this time as the home favourites. Well, they started all right, but then the Blues just ran them ragged. So that's all done for the Rebels. So tough start for them. Friday, today, sees the match of the weekend at 8:35 South African time. Highlanders versus Chiefs. Two star-studded teams. What a contest that's going to be. And then we've got the Reds versus the Sox. It won't be as much of a contest, but still, these plucky young Sharks, they've got a great fixture list this year. And they know if they can just do all right in their first two games, which are against the Reds and the Brumbies away from home, they then go back to Durban, where the weather is warm and everything is happy, and they can get a real good points tally on the go here. So tough parts in the beginning, they're going to be fired up 11 o'clock SA time right here on Friday. Then tomorrow we've got the Sunwolves getting hammered by the Hurricanes 6:50. The Crusaders will trump the Brumbies at 8:35. The Waratahs will be far too good for the Force at 10:45, and then the Cheetahs versus the Lions at 3:05. This is an interesting matchup because the Cheetahs, of course, Curry Cup champions, very, very positive, confident guys. The Lions, well, it's the second season syndrome. Are they going to do a Leicester and go nowhere, or are they going to kick on? I think they're more going to kick on, but still, this game is going to be pretty tight. Then the Kings will host the Jaguares. Now, the Jaguares are a very, very strong team if they can keep all the players in the field. And I think against the Kings, there should be at least 10 to 15, if not more, better. And then Stormers versus the Bulls, the big North-South derby, will finish off this week in a Super Rugby down at Newlands. The Bulls team on paper is looking pretty strong. Stormers, well, they've still got some holes here and there. They should have a decent enough forward pack, and they should be better at playing boring rugby than the young, exciting Bulls team, so that'll probably be the edge for them there. In football news for the weekend, well, it's the League Cup final between Southampton and Man United, so this is Jose's first chance for a title there. That'll be at 6:30 on Sunday, and there will be some English Premier League before that. Chelsea versus Swansea at 5, Spurs versus Stoke at 3:30. Speaking of Spurs, they're out of the Europa League, a league which they always play in every single year because they can't go any better, but they drew with Ghent 2-2 last night, which wasn't good enough because Ghent were 1-0 up going into the tie, so they're out of that one. Locally, we've got a big game this weekend. We've got Sundowns versus Wits at Loftus on Saturday. expect really, really good football there. These are the two top teams, I believe. You throw in SuperSport United, perhaps. Although Chiefs, they will argue they are also a top team. They play Ajax Cape Town on Saturday night at 8:15 in Cape Town. Bloem Celtic will take on Platinum Stars 3:30, and then Pirates take on Polokwane also at 3:30. So it's a big full Saturday there. Tonight we'll see Chippa United versus Golden Arrows at 8:00, and then Sunday Maritzburg United versus Free State Stars at 3:30. Baroka FC versus Cape Town FC at 3:30 as well. In golf, well, the rain just keeps coming down here in Joburg. Some American guy managed to get the best of the conditions. He was 9 under par after a round of 62 on the West Course, but then the rain came down and I think 98 players still have to finish their first round. That's not looking good because the rain is going to keep coming. The Honda Classic, the weather looks pretty good there. So a whole bunch of Americans are playing for that. And right now, Australia are currently playing India. They made a bit of a shitty start yesterday. The first innings ended on 260 all out. They were going great guns, though, at 82 for zero. But then Warner went out, and then fellow opening batsman Matt Renshaw needed a shit, like really, really badly. Needed to go drop trial and get rid of something he had. You know, when you go to India, especially when you're young and inexperienced, you're never too sure how it's going to work. And, his bowels were working overtime. He literally had to retire hurt. He said to his captain, "Sorry, Skip, really need to take a dump." And he had to go off. So he went off, and then the innings fell to pieces.
That's so funny. So he actually said, "I need to take a dump."
Yeah. So, in the gentleman's sense, he retired hurt, but in the real sense, he had to just run to the bodges.
It's funny.
And he came back, and he was the top scorer in 62. And then eventually Mitchell Starc, he saved the blushes. 260 all out, which isn't a good enough score when you're batting first. India currently 34 for 1 in the 10th over. Rahul just hits O'Keefe for 6.
Rahul.
O'Keefe is their spinner, and he's already getting taken apart. Huh. Yeah, so that's pretty much it for the sport for the weekend, Gareth. Loads of rugby. The rain's killed the golf. But luck is cricket too. Proteas, 3 a.m. tomorrow, Saturday morning. We'll take on the Black Caps again in the next ODI. And that's it.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ben. Let's get to Anthea and find out what's going on in the Money Shot. Are you ready for that, Mubs? Let's do it. It's the Chipmunks singing Anthea's theme for this morning. She works hard for the money. Good morning, Anthea.
Good morning, Gareth.
It is Friday. Ignore the really ridiculous.
Silly Friday.
All right. What's up?
Okay. So market yesterday, shares were mixed. Market ended flat. It kind of belied how busy we were yesterday, though. I mean, I've got like a deluge of company reports to get through. Okay. Resource shares were up 0.1%. Financials up about 0.75%. Some good company results out there. But then the industrials took a bit of pain because the rand was so much stronger. Against the dollar, we're now 12.87. Against the euro, 13.61, and the pound sterling cross, 16.15. I mean, I actually just cannot believe how strong this rand is, and I don't know what else to say about it. I sound like a stuck record. Mm-hmm. Stop talking about it now. So I've got about 8 companies on the pad, but I don't think I'll go through them all this morning. I'll just go through the interesting ones. The most incredible one, by far, Bidcorp. So yes. That was the food services business, which was spun out of Bidvest. Henry Biddlecombe covers this share. I don't think I've ever seen him that excited. An exceptional set of results, well ahead of consensus. Diluted headline earnings per share was up 20%. But the real magic, 20%, not a bad number. The real magic is in the extent of the margin improvements. And I think Brian Joffe has previously said he wanted to reach 5% trading profit margin. And Henry was telling me that he'd penciled in. So obviously it doesn't go from kind of 2.5 to 5. It's very much a progressive thing. It's a growth situation. And Henry was telling me he penciled in 3.9% margin by 2018. And yesterday they came out with 4.2%. So beating his expectation, like kind of way forward, almost 18 months ahead of time. And the very good news is that we have a 4.5% weight in our hashtag invest equity portfolios.
Yay. So that means that everybody scores.
Yeah, we've had a really good run in the last 2 weeks of kind of stock picking. We've done really well, kind of got them spot on. The problem at the moment is that the market is just heavy. You know, in the last 2 weeks, we're down, the market overall is down about just under 1.5%. And unfortunately, you know, it does weigh on our portfolio. So I think where we've kind of managed to stay flat generally, the market's down. Hopefully what will happen is when the market starts going again, our shares, the good ones that we've picked, will outperform at least. And then there was also Discovery. They reported their first half profit up 15%. I mean, they're an incredible business. They just keep writing this new business up also 15% with profit to 8.2 billion rand now. They said they're still waiting for their banking license from the Reserve Bank. They're expecting that they should be able to start offering banking services during the course of next year. I thought it would be this year, but apparently not.
Okay.
And then still on the banking side, Barclays reported yesterday, not nearly as exciting. Headline earnings per share up 5%, a little bit below expectations. Some positive news, though, on the separation from the Barclays PLC, which is the UK business. It is a bit odd, though. PLC, which is the UK business, will pay Barclays Africa 13 billion rand to help them with a split. So, I mean, I listened to an interview with Maria Ramos yesterday, and she was saying that they'll use it to invest and expand into Africa. But it's weird to think that a big company would pay their merged company or their sister company to get rid of them almost. I think, in effect, Barclays PLC actually have to reduce their stake below, I think it is 25%, just for regulatory purposes. So they'll still be selling down Barclays Africa. And then Maria Ramos actually apologized yesterday for the currency collusion. She said,
That's a big deal.
But you know, they were always going to, cooperate with the Competition Commission. They did say that.
Right.
They were like the snitches in the room, actually. and she said that those who were found guilty would be held accountable. I'm not sure they're going to go to jail, but there you go.
Okay. Well, good for her. At least she admitted they've screwed up royally here.
Exactly. Yeah. She was big enough to do that. You're right. And then just the last one before I go. British American Tobacco also reported yesterday full year earnings. Top line revenue, a little bit better than expected. We saw 12.6% growth there. Earnings per share up 9.8%. So not bad. But the key highlight here was their growth in their heat not burn launch in Japan. In the first 10 weeks, they got 5.4% market share. I think I've previously told you about this product. So the harmful part of the cigarette is when the tobacco combusts. And what British American Tobacco have done is found a way for people to smoke without actually burning the tobacco. So what is released is not as harmful as those burnt compounds. It's not vaping. Apparently, it's a lot healthier. But I've also read somewhere that it's probably a lot more addictive than tobacco, burning tobacco. So, interesting. Wow. But the fact that they found this product, that in the first 10 weeks they got 5.4% market share in Japan, that's an incredible number. And I think this could well be a big driver for long-term performance in British American Tobacco, especially as people move towards healthier lifestyles. You know, this is kind of been replacing vape and actual cigarettes.
All right. Well, that sounds interesting enough. So what are we looking forward to today? Anything exciting happening today? You mentioned there's so many company reports out already.
Yeah, Gareth, I was hoping for a positive day, but I've seen this morning Asia's red across the board, 10 cents already down over 1% today. The Rand's a little bit weaker than where it closed yesterday, so I don't know. I'm hoping for a positive day, but it doesn't look good for me.
All right, well, let's hold thumbs. You never know.
All right, have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks, Anthea. Very, very cool. All right, Anthea Gardner. And by the way, Anthea's colleague, Martin Smith, will be in a moment or two. He's brought his guitar. You know he's got a song that he's done.
Yes.
And we're going to talk to him about that.
Yes, actually went to his launch sometime last year.
Oh, you went?
Yeah.
I was meant to go, but you know I don't leave my house. So.
You know, we actually discussed this last night. I was at a movie screening for Hidden Figures, which is, by the way, an awesome, awesome
Hidden
movie.
Fences?
Hidden Figures.
You remember?
Please.
George Bush's daughter confused that one and Fences. All right, so tell me, first of all, okay, so you were talking about what? Me?
About the fact that you never, ever.
Guess where I was last night?
Anything. In bed?
Yes.
Exactly. Did you have a salad for dinner?
I was actually, I was answering emails at my computer in my study, and my only company was the dog.
There we go.
And then I did get into bed at like 11, not bad. And I didn't have to be in traffic in the rain. On my way to Monte Cassino, like you.
But the movie started at like 7-ish, so no traffic.
Well, wasn't it meant to start at 6:30? Yeah.
It was like this panel situation discussing women. And
so how was the movie? That sounds horrible. A panel discussing women.
Well, women breaking down barriers in like engineering fields and the science field and maths field.
I'm so glad I didn't go. What a lot of shit.
Actually,
really?
The panel was interesting. And then there were girls from Oprah School.
Uh-oh.
Which was even more interesting.
Did you want to cut them bitches?
No, I just wanted to be friends with them. But then I realized I was actually kind of stalker. Because I was standing in the corner of the foyer just smiling at little girls. I'm like, this is pedophilia 101. So let me actually stop this. But having them in the audience while you watch the movie, like, to, you know, and Hidden Figures is about the, you know, three main protagonists who are black women back in the 60s who worked
amazing
at NASA.
And that's an amazing story.
Absolutely. So having, you know, these young black girls from Oprah School while you watch that movie, they were amazing because every scene when like Taraji P. Henson dropped a powerful one-liner, they'd like stand up and cheer and amen about town. So it was absolutely awesome. Really, really good night.
All right. Well, you know what? I do like the fact that there are stories like this being told.
Yeah.
There's no way that those women would have been given the credit they were due in those days.
Yeah.
And that's important. But I can imagine nothing worse than sitting and listening to a panel talking about that. Oh, my God. All right. Let's get into
getting out.
Yeah. Let's get stuck into our morning. It is Friday and the weekend is here. I hope you're ready for that. Ben has chosen some songs for today. Are you ready?
Friday.
All right, what should we start with, Ben?
Anything you like, Gareth.
All right, let's check this out. It's Fire, Justice. Just for a Friday. CliffCentral.com.